8 a.m. having arrived. We're going to call the committee taxes to order. And we don't have a quorum quite yet, but the first two bills are Representative McDonald's. And before we start, Representative McDonald, thank you so much. Last night, he and I were at the Mitchell Hamlin School of Law on a panel on tax policy, and I had to leave early, so he had to take over for the House there. And so thank you very much for carrying the load the rest of the way, Representative McDonald, last night.
Thank you, Chair Markert. My back is a little sore for carrying the load, but I was happy to do it.
Very good. So Representative McDonald, when we get a quorum, we will do the proper motions and so forth, but we don't at this point. But if you would start with House File 413. Is the first bill on the agenda.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 4.
But we won't have a quorum.
Oh, that's correct, yes.
If you just proceed with that, we'll...
I should know that after 4 years on this committee. 413 offers a tax exemption, a sales tax exemption for lakeshore homeowners and subcontractors who are trying to get their hands on the invasive aquatic species. You're all aware of the situation of the issue, so I won't go into the details, but with the DNR's help, of course, and the legislature's assistance and the homeowners who live on the lakes, we can really have an opportunity to handle the invasive species, AIS. So this does just a small little token. It's a little tip of the hat to those homeowners who use their own money to help fight this species in their lakes. And it's just a sales tax exemption at the point of purchase at the time. Lakeshore homeowners members in the state is around 150 members, and they spend out of their own pocket about $5 million annually to fight the AIS. So this little sales tax exemption, I think, is good tax policy. It's a way to say thank you to those who are fighting this invasive species that is ruining our waters in the state of Minnesota. So that is what the bill does, and I stand for questions. I think we do have one testifier, perhaps. If they didn't, they're probably caught in traffic on this. The congestion on the highways is horrible.
Very good, Representative McDonald. We do now have a quorum, so we'll do a little business right now. And has anyone had a chance to look at the February 12, 2019 minutes for approval?
So moved.
Representative Chung moves approval of the February 12, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on those? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The February 12, 2019 minutes are approved. Now, Representative McDonald, would you like to move your bill? And there is an amendment, I believe, also. So...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'd like to move House File 413 for possible laid over possible inclusion of the omnibus tax bill, and I'd like
very,
to...
Very good. We have that motion, and how would you like to move the...
Yeah, I'd like to move my amendment, the 413A1 amendment.
All right. Representative McDonald moves the 413A1 amendment. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, we'll take the vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment, A1 amendment, is adopted. Are there any testifiers to this? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forster, and I am Executive Director of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates.
Please proceed. Thank you.
Well, we're in favor of this. Concordia University did a study a few years back, 2017. They found that lake associations are contributing $6.2 million annually to the public good, to protecting lakes. They're doing things like, you know, treating for aquatic invasive species, hiring inspectors, building water trails, setting up shore lunch sites, putting out buoys, installing storm warning, sirens and so forth. They're contributing 1.25 million volunteer hours. And so this would just be kind of a recognition and a little bit of help to them as they go about doing this work. And so we would be in favor of it.
Very good. Any questions for Mr. Forster? Hearing none. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, sir.
Representative McDowell, do you know of any other testifiers that you have on your bill?
I do not.
So is there anyone in the audience right now who would care to testify in support or with concerns on House File 413? Seeing none, members, any comments, questions for Representative McDonald? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald, was this included in last year's tax bill that was rejected by the governor?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Yes, it was. We worked hard on this the last couple of years, and it did make it into the bill. Unfortunately, it got vetoed, of course. So, yes, thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, this could have already been done. So, that's too bad.
Any other questions or comments from members? If not, Representative McDonald renews his motion to lay over House File 413 as amended for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald, would you like to move House File 709?
I am proud to move House File 709.
Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for accommodating the schedule and allow these bills to be scheduled for today instead of yesterday's snowstorm. It was a daunting task to get here from the great city of Delano, so much obliged to you. This particular bill is a great bill. Who likes county fairs here? Raise your hand. The county fairs, yes. Do you know how many county fairs there are, Mr. Chair, in the state of Minnesota?
Representative McDonald, we have 87 counties, of course, and I know some counties have more than one, like Otter Tail has east and west. 92?
You are very close. I didn't know this, so you're far above myself. 95 county fairs in the state of Minnesota. And you know, the county fairs and the state fair, the county fairs do wonderful work for our communities. They're a great fun. I always bring my kids every year to the Wright County Fair. I only have one county fair to go to, the Wright County Fair. Some members have three or four county fairs. Fabian, you have four county fairs he gets to go. Lucky you. You have two, Representative Erickson. Anyway, they are a great colorful contribution to our state. And what this does is it offers a sales tax exemption on tickets purchased at the county fairs and other items. It allows those county fairs who are all nonprofit and who are working on small budgets and they're to keep some of that money to invest back into their buildings and infrastructure and necessary areas for success in their county fairs. So it's a very simple bill, in so much as the fact that it offers that sales tax exemption, lets them keep it in their county. So all counties, every county in the state of Minnesota, will benefit from this. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Very good. Representative McDonald, do you have any testifiers?
I do have a testifier. A.J. is here. A.J. Doerr.
Okay. And while you're coming forward, I know Representative Carlson, you had a question.
I think he answered the question just now, but being that he had done such major research on the number of fairs, I was curious if there were any counties that did not have a fair. And I think that they all do.
Representative McDonald.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Representative Carlson. That is correct. To my knowledge, though, I could be corrected easily shortly right here.
Representative Carlson.
It's not a major question. No. I'm curious, being that he quiz you, the chair, of
yes.
How many county fairs there were, and what did we come up with,
90? 95, I believe. 95. Yeah. You bet. So, all right. We have a few testifiers. If everyone wants to start there, if you would introduce yourself for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrew Doerr. I represent the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs. And before I get started, you are correct, Representative Carlson. There is a fair in every county in the state of Minnesota. And as has been mentioned, there a few have two. I'm just going to, Representative McDonald did a great job describing the bill, so I'm just going to touch on briefly a couple of things, and I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Schumann, who's on our board of directors at the Federation of County Fairs. The Federation of County Fairs is a state association that represents all of the state's county ag societies and thus all the state's county fairs. For those that are unfamiliar, county ag societies are formed and given powers in Minnesota State Statute Chapter 38. And are formed and given those powers for the purpose and to hold and operate a county fair. And what this bill does, as been said, it offers a sales tax exemption for sales made by the County Ag Society during the days of the county fair. County Ag Societies have a couple of different forms of revenue. There are a couple of grant opportunities at the state level that if a county fair does, or a county ag society, I should say, does apply and receive it, they could get up to roughly about $12,000 from the state. There's also revenue from the county itself, and that's what greatly varies across the state. There are some counties that invest heavily into the county ag society and the county fair, and there are some that, you know, especially the ones with really small population, that don't have the ability to do that. And of course, the third form of revenue, which we're talking about today, is sales made by the County Ag Society. And they usually come in four different, as they're spelled out in Section 2 of the bill, four different ways. There's parking and admissions. They're typically one or the other. There may be some county fairs that do both. I've gone to a number of county fairs, and it's usually, you know, parking or admissions. There's ticket sales to events, typically at the grandstands. And there's also concessions sold by the County Ag Society. A couple of things that the bill doesn't provide an exemption for, of course, are sales made by any entity other than the County Ag Society. So vendors that come in and make sales are still subject to sales tax under this bill. And also sales made by the County Ag Society that are outside the days of the county fair. And there are some of those that are made typically for renting out storage at the county fairgrounds or renting out space to hold events. That would also not be subject to the exemption under this bill. So it's we really wanted to narrow this down to when someone visits the county fair and invests that money either in an admission ticket or going to the grandstand or buying something at the concessions from the County Ag Society, that all that money goes back into the actual fairgrounds. And, you know, if you look at, to really tighten it up even more, what we put in Section 1 of the bill is that the County Ag Society must figure out what the amount of sales tax that they would collect should this bill pass, that they would have collected should they have had to submit it to the state. And that amount has to be reinvested back into the county fairgrounds. And as you can see in Section 1, that it covers a couple of different scenarios depending on who owns the fairgrounds. Roughly half of the county fairs or county fairgrounds are owned by the County Ag Society. Most of the others are owned by the county itself. There are a couple of differences. I know of a couple, and maybe Ms. Schumann can help me with this, that are owned by municipalities. And there's actually one Northern St. Louis County Fair in Chisholm that's actually on state land. The vast majority are owned by either the County Ag Society or the county itself. And this language, it's in my opinion, it's comfort language, because as nonprofits, there's really not much else we would do with it anyways. But just to give folks comfort that the money that would not be going to the state is going to be reinvested in to the public good into the county fairgrounds itself. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Ms. Schumann, and then we'll stand for questions.
Very good. Welcome, and please state your name.
Carol Schumann, a director with the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs, specifically for District 1. I'm also a Goodhue County Fair director. And so, yes, we're interested in investing this money back into our county fairs. I come from a fair that's, well, many are probably about our size at Goodhue County and Sembrota. We have a number of older buildings, probably built in the 50s, 60s, 70s, mostly the livestock buildings, and our 4-H building was in the late 60s. Many of these buildings are, you know, we continue to use. We do the best we can. We can paint. As a junior fair board member 30-some years ago, I was painting bathrooms and things, and they continue to get repainted to get a fresh look, and we could do a few small fix-its with our volunteer boards. But those buildings are getting much older, and we really need to do some major remodeling in some of them. Back in those 40, 50 years ago, livestock were a little bit smaller. Some of the pens that would maybe hold two hogs comfortably then no longer can do that. The hogs are much larger, as an example. So we'd really like to, and like many of the fairs, have these older buildings. They'd like to do some major remodeling for the livestock, for our 4-H youth, so that they're more comfortable in those buildings, improve the walkways. Some of our barns still have the dirt floors, so they can be, you know, a little rough to to walk through for our fairgoers. And then also in Goodhue County, we have another major issue. We have to do something with our septic system. We're in Mineola Township, and we have city limits bordering two sides of our fairgrounds. And so we are working with the city to see if we can't connect with the city septic and water system. But that is looking to be anywhere from probably $85,000 to $100,000 project to get that through to our forage building and near our livestock buildings. So, you know, being on the Goodhue County Fair Board, I'm just one of the 90-plus fairs that are probably dealing with some of the very same problems. We're all working with older buildings that we want to continue to use. They're part of the charm of the county fair, but they need to be upgraded, and it takes money to do that.
Thank you very much. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think maybe this is a question for Mr. Dewar. I'd imagine the size of the county fairs varies a little bit. So for an individual county fair, what's the amount of money that we're talking about, or kind of the range that we'd be talking about?
Mr. Dewar?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Becker Friend. That's a really good question, and the size varies greatly. And so the benefit would probably also vary to a certain extent, depending on how much of the revenue comes from sales made by the County Ag Society. You know, for example, in my visits to county fairs last summer, I try to go to a number of them each year. I went down to Steele County, which is the biggest county fair. I mean, it is huge. It's been compared to the state fair, which is probably an exaggeration, but it's probably closer to the state fair than your average county fair. It is. It's massive. I also went to the Ramsey County Fair, which is much smaller in scale, but it's a fantastic fair, and that's actually the one where I probably was the most encouraged by the opportunity of this bill. The Ramsey County Fair in particular relies heavily on their parking sales, and the things that they're doing you know, with those funds, promoting agriculture in particular. One of the new things that the Ramsey County Fair is doing is bringing in ag teachers from the St. Paul Public School System to teach agriculture on the county fair site. So it was great to see those funds being used to, you know, for the youth of Ramsey County, or anybody, not just the youth, learning about agriculture with the animals and things like that at the Ramsey County Fair. But you're absolutely right. It does vary greatly. We did submit a survey out to try to get a handle on. We don't keep records of our association of each county fair's finances, but of the fairs that did respond, and we just sent it out last Friday to try to get an idea. The highest one I saw was $23,000, and the lowest one I saw was about $2,000. As far as the benefit of it.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Dewar. You know, I could do the math overall with 93 fairs, but I guess that it would have been a range depending upon the fair, so thank you for that.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and since we did talk about Steele County Fair, it is what I think one of the best fairs, and it's the week before the State Fair.
Members, if we're all going to brag about our fairs, we're not going to have time to finish today.
Yeah,
but our fairs are wonderful. We know that. Representative Petersburg, anything further? Thank you very much. You have every right to do that. Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Steele County Fair is an amazing fair. It seriously is. It's huge, and the whole community gets together, and you know, there's a great variance in county fairs and attendance and things like that. But Steele County probably is, next to the state fair, the largest.
Oh.
I can speak for you, but you just be quiet.
Very good.
Could I add to this?
Mr.
Yeah, the fairs do vary greatly, probably anywhere from like 5,000 to, I believe Steele County was over 300,000 in attendance this year, estimated. They also vary greatly on the income, because some fairs charge a daily admission fee or parking fee. Steele County Fair is a free fair. They have some parking, so you would pay parking. But they're in the city limits, so I'm sure that's part of the reason that it would be difficult to have an admission. But then most fairs probably have some grandstand events. Now, Steele County Fair, interestingly, just I think it was 2 years ago, they had a lot of rain. I think there was two or three other grandstand shows that were canceled. You know, so weather plays a big factor, too, for our county fairs and our income. if it's poor weather, people aren't coming out and we don't get the attendance. So that makes a big difference for us, too, to cover all our costs.
Very good. All right. Anyone else in the audience that would care to testify for or against House File 709? Seeing none, Representative McDonald, testifiers, thank you. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, just closing thoughts. Of course, our chair is the second author on the bill, and Paul and I, Representative Marquardt and I, had the great honor a month ago to be honored at the county fair, the county fair meeting, state convention, where we got our award as Friends of the County Fair Award, Representative Marquardt and myself, and it was a great honor. About 1,000 folks were there to for us to participate, and they fed us a wonderful dinner, so thank you so much. And it's a great fair. Now, if you really want to see a great expedition, is the Combine Demolition Derby at the Wright County Fair. Be sure to see that at the that's a lot of fun. So with that, I thank you very much for the consideration of this, and I renew my motion for the House File 709 to be laid over to be included in the tax omnibus bill.
Very good. So Representative McDonald renews his motion to lay over House File 709 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. So thank you so much. Thank you, testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 886. And could I ask a member, and there is an amendment here, could I ask a member to move? Representative Les Legarde moves House File 886 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And Representative Les Legarde, would you also like to move the A1 amendment to get the bill into its proper form? Representative Les Legarde moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, I'm going to call for the vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hewitt, welcome to the committee, and looks like this must be your first time here at the committee. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, it is my first time, and I'm thinking there's a system here that you chairs have of inviting freshmen to the 8 o'clock meeting for donuts.
That's right.
So here's your donuts. Help yourself.
Very good.
Members, thank you very much for having me in front of your committee to hear this very important bill that will help Minnesota taxpayers. This is Bill 886. This bill will help two-thirds of Minnesotans claim a standard deduction. The proposal would increase the standard deduction by $2,000 for joint filers. Taking the standard deduction is a simpler and faster way for Minnesotans to file their taxes. Increasing the standard deduction provides a bigger tax benefit for the better and easier way to file your taxes. Increasing the standard deduction by $2,000 for joint filers would save a Minnesota married couple earning median income $140. Under this proposal, the number of taxpayers claiming the standard deduction instead of itemizing deduction would increase. Increasing the standard deduction has had bipartisan support in the past. In 2018, the House Omnibus Tax Bill increased the standard deduction by $1,000 for joint filers. This proposal would reduce taxes for over 1.8 million Minnesotans, and about half of those receiving the benefit earn under $50,000. Nearly 90% of the benefit goes to those earning under $150,000. Mr. Chair, I stand for your questions.
Very good. Are there any questions from members? And Mr. Williams, could you talk a little bit about what the current standard deduction is in law and what the federal standard deduction is and how this bill would kind of mesh up with all of those?
Mr. Chair and members, if you look in the bill summary, there's a table included that might be helpful for you. So there's sort of three numbers in the table. There's the current law, federal standard deduction amounts. For tax year 2019, that's forecast to be $24,450. But, of course, because Minnesota is not yet conformed to the TCJA, for Minnesota purposes, the standard deduction in tax year 2019 is forecast to be $13,300. So the bill would then be a $2,000 increase relative to the current law base, which would be $15,300 for married couples filing jointly.
So thank you, Mr. Williams. And so this would raise the for married filing from 13.3 to 15.3. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like that this approach will actually make it easier for a lot of people to file their taxes without having to itemize in order to get a maximum benefit, because we know there's a lot of people who struggle still with math and the complexity of our tax system, and being able to take the standard deduction, get a little less, and it, in addition to getting a tax break, would I think work better for both efficiency and processing at the Department of Revenue, but more importantly, help more people feel confident about their taxes and having it done quickly, easily, cheaply. And I wonder, Mr. Hote, you kind of went really fast through those numbers. Can you tell us again who the major benefits are? I know you mentioned like under 50,000. If you could just do that one more time. I was trying to catch it.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler. I'll just go back to the state. So basically, married filing jointly, right now, the current deduction is 13.3. If this is put into law, they would receive 15.3. A single right now is $6,650. With this, it would be $7,650. Married filing separate would be the same. Right now, it sits at $6,650. It'll be $7,650. A head of household would be, right now, it sits at $9,750. It would go to $11,200.
Representative Hewitt, but I think Representative Loeffler asked questions as far as income levels and where the dollars and the benefits would go. You had mentioned something about $50,000 income, $150,000 income.
I would use a lifeline for this and refer to the department, but I do have the one statement that we saw with that I'm going to use the department on that. That's
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hewitt, there's also a memo that I think was distributed to members and to the public with some modeling numbers for this bill, and then also the two rate cut bills I think that we're going to be hearing next. So the numbers for House File 886, Representative Hewitt's bill is on sort of the fourth page of that memo that was distributed.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Williams. This is really helpful. It's on the back page. I didn't quite get to that yet, but it shows that two-thirds of the benefit is to households earning under $100,000. Which is a group that I think is really living paycheck to paycheck, and at least in my district is the one that most feels the economic pressures right now. And yet everyone gets some benefit, some decrease. So I think this is a direction we should consider going.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the author. Under your bill, would anyone in the state of Minnesota see an increase in their tax liability?
Mr. Chair, there is potential for some small increase, but I think that this being the first part of this bill could definitely be worked out in the process as you guys develop your big tax bill.
So, Representative McDonald, Mr. Williams, there is a kind of a counterintuitive, and I think even last year when the House increased the standard deduction $1,000, I don't think this was brought up, but Mr. Williams, if you would talk about that quirk of what occurs here with the increase in the standard deduction.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, so looking through the modeling yesterday, I was sort of surprised that the model was showing tax increases because it's not obvious that increasing the standard deduction would result in increases. But Minnesota's marriage credit formula takes into account the standard deduction. It's a very complicated formula, but essentially what's happening is that the standard deduction increases. Some taxpayers are receiving slightly reduced marriage credits, which are resulting in small tax increases even relative to the increase in the standard deduction. So if you look at the modeling, it's most of these increases are small. They're $1 to $25, but there are some increases resulting from increases in the standard deduction.
So, Representative McDonald, if this was to move forward, you'd have to correct those quirks and make that work. But Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I hope that the author, certainly it's not your intent to raise taxes on folks in your district, especially married couples who need every dollar to take care of the family. So I'm hopeful that you'll take care of that in your bill going forward.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, yes, actually, after I got this bill up and going, I did get a lot of calls from the new families, and they're excited about it. They see this as being beneficial for their going forward. And coming from a good Irish Catholic family, I got relatives all over the state, and they also called me both in mixed marriages, Democrat and Republican marriages. So, they're excited about this. They're thinking we're moving forward, and it's good to hear that I think we can do this bipartisan.
And thank you, Representative Hewitt. And members, if you take a look at the revenue estimate into the future, it's basically a tax cut of about $157 million a year in 2021 and about $162 million each of the next 2 years. So it's a pretty significant tax cut for folks. And I was doing some reading the other day, and it said that in the United States, people spend, this was hard to believe, but I got it right, 6 billion hours and spend $263 billion complying with our tax code. So I suppose that would be, we've talked about sales tax and all that. I suppose if you add up, and I added, that's 18 hours per every citizen in the United States, man, woman, and child. So I suppose that would be counting, businesses when they're, but even if that's even close, that is huge. And one thing a standard deduction would do is make it simpler. It would decrease those hours somewhat. And what a standard deduction does is actually, because we're going to talk a little bit later about marginal rates, but it actually increases the zero marginal rate. So, if you add up your personal independent exemptions, that's basically a zero rate on taxes that you don't pay on your first whatever. And so like when the federal government went to $24,000 last year on the standard deduction, many times that was kind of referred to as a zero rate from zero to $24,000. And one other thing when you talk about standard deductions is something the economists and that look at horizontal equity. And that's kind of a basis in the tax code. And what it says is that people who make the same income should be paying the same amount of taxes. And of course, that gets messed up a little bit with tax expenditures when you're giving preferences. So the more you work on the standard deduction, the more you increase kind of that equity among and fairness among all taxpayers. And I have to tell you, I was reading, if anyone hasn't read this book, Showdown at Gucci Gulch, it was on the 1986 tax reform when President Reagan and Congress was working on that. It's a wonderful book, and it gives all the insight of, talks about all the tax expenditures. But Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, had a quote talking about tax expenditures that called tax expenditures the underground economy that needed to get to the light of tax compliance. I mean, what a great, this is... And so, anyway, I have that book, the hardcover, if anyone wants to see that. So, Representative Swedzinski.
Mr. Chair, I just had a quip. If you have a flat tax bill, maybe we could get some co-authors for that.
Representative Swedzinski, that is not on the agenda today. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was at a meeting the other day. And taxes came up, and a comment was made. I'm not going to say it was a suggestion, but something you could do is double your contribution the first year to a charitable group, whatever, and then take so that the charity would be getting the same amount, but then the next year the taxpayer would take the standard deduction.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That was just a comment.
Yeah, no. Just pondering, Representative Carlson.
Thinking about when to get the checkbook out. It's an interesting comment. Well, I don't think the person was making that as a suggestion. It's just something you could do. And I suppose it depends on your income bracket and one thing and another, but you could double your contribution the first year and then take the standard the second year.
Oh, Representative Carlson, I mean, it's
just a good bill. I didn't mean it as
yeah, no, I mean, it's but you bring up just in doing that. I mean, things are complicated and people are trying to work things, and that's one thing about the standard deduction. It greatly simplifies filing and that whole process for millions of taxpayers.
And Mr. Chairman, that was in reference to federal changes.
Sure, like, yeah. Anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against the House File 886 as amended? Seeing none, any other comments from members? Representative Hewitt, any closing comments that you would have?
Members, this proposal, again, would reduce taxes for reduced taxes in the amount of $1.8 million Minnesotans. It would about half of those receiving the benefit earn under $50,000. Nearly 90% of them are earning over $150,000. I know this bill doesn't cover everything, and particularly there are those that don't even have a state income tax liability, but pay a lot in income, pay a lot in sales tax, property tax, and other taxes. And there are a big cost to this. There's a big cost to this proposal. But as you put together your bill, I encourage you to consider increasing the standard deduction as one piece of the puzzle. It's a great way to both increase simplicity and cut taxes.
Representative Hewitt. Thank you so much. And Representative Les Legarde renews his motion to lay over House File 886 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. So thank you very much, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Committee.
So, members, next we have House File 174, Representative Kosnick, and House File 42, Representative Hertaus. If I could have you both come down, what we'll do is what we've done with some other bills is we will move, because it's first on the agenda, Representative Kosnick's bill, and then we'll have, because both deal with income tax rate cuts, we'll have both of you testify, and then what I think we'll do is have, I know there's a number of testifiers, and have those folks come down and testify, and then we have questions and members' questions, and we'll go from there, and then we'll finish moving your bill, Representative Kosnick, and then we'll do the proper procedure on Representative Hertaus's bill. So with that, would someone like to move House File 174? Chair Davids moves House File 174 for possible inclusion into the tax bill, and there is an amendment, and let's take a look at that. Representative Davids, do you also move the A1 amendment? Chair Davids moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Kosnick, please proceed.
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt. Hope you made it to committee today. I was able to give you a ride yesterday, and that was my privilege. It was also my privilege to be on this committee for the previous 4 years, seeing the Dunkin' Donuts here. I'm kind of bummed I didn't ask to be on the committee again this year, but I'm pleased to be here. And as we, you guys have, the Tax Committee has an important charge in terms of trying to figure out how to best reform our tax code to align with the federal tax cuts. One of the provisions that I was pleased to have included in the previous bills that were passed through the House but vetoed was to reduce the income tax rates on all the individual income tax brackets. When I was first on the tax committee. I was actually one of the few freshmen that was on the tax committee that year, and I know we have a couple new people and freshmen on this committee, so you're probably a little bit smarter than me because we weren't able to fully get this done. But I was happy to introduce the bill that was simple enough to understand that a freshman could author it. And that was just simply rather than having tax reductions and certain segments and carve-outs, just simply lower the rates on each of the four individual income tax brackets. Is probably the best way to offset the increases from the federal tax conformity with broad-based tax relief that will make Minnesota's tax system more competitive and help encourage greater economic growth is the premise. It's important for Minnesota's tax burdens to be competitive with those other states and in the nation in order to have a strong and growing economy that we're currently enjoying, but we want to make sure that we keep that going. And all four rates are among the highest in the nation currently, and even Minnesota's lowest rate at 5.35 is higher than many of the other rates in other states. In addition, I want to share, make note that other states have recently reduced tax rates, including across-the-board rate reductions as a result of the federal tax conformity in 2017. I'll kind of leave it at that. It's a pretty simple bill, reducing the rates by an eighth of a percent. Representative Hertas's bill is a little bit more aggressive, which I think shows that the bill can be scaled to fit into the chair's larger bill when we get to that. And then we'll save time for the testifiers that can speak more to it specifically. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Hertas.
You want to move the bill?
We're not going to move your bill. Right now, because we just have already one move, so we'll hear the testifying from you, and then after we move the Kosnick bill, then we'll do the proper paperwork on yours. So we're just going to hear your point.
Very good. Well, thank you, and thanks for sharing those numbers about how much time and energy the nation spends preparing taxes. I think some of us who have been commissioned salespeople look at $263 billion and think that'd be a pretty nice number to get a piece of. Anyway, with that, thank you. Well, House File 42 and what we're doing here, you might really I wanted to say it was a tax simplification a bill just to have a two-line form. How much did you make and send it in, right? No. But anyway, with that said, apparently not a lot of humor in the committee this morning.
You didn't bring donuts, otherwise there would be.
Well, as Representative Kosnick said, both of our bills have to do with all the four tiers of our income tax rates and to reduce those rates. Recently, because of the tax conformity, Kiplinger has... and because we did not conform with the federal tax changes, Kiplinger has rated Minnesota now as the highest tax state in the nation, mainly because of that conformity issue. And I think it's really incumbent upon us to try and do whatever we can do as we strive to have some sort of conformity with the federal changes to kind of cause a no net harm to Minnesota taxpayers. And as Representative Kosnick mentioned, both his bill and my bill are very scalable in terms of being able to look at how we might be able to address the complexities as we move forward. Also, with regard to our status in the nation and our ranking compared to the other states, obviously we've got seven or eight states that are no tax states, but amongst the remaining 42, we have this high standing. And it's important to understand that with regard to our income tax rates and our other tax rates, even business has to compete with attracting good talent and labor to bring capital to Minnesota. It's in our best interest to not be the highest tax state in the nation. And so I thank you for considering both of these proposals. As Representative Kosnick mentioned, it is very scalable. And when the targets come out next week, and as you start to put together your budget, as the majority, you'll determine how much is going to be available for tax relief, if any. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hertas, I just looking at these documents that were included in the folder for your bill, and they just don't have any, like, attribution or anything on them, so I'm just wondering, are these from House Research, or are these from another source, or what's the... Just like all these, there's
so
a stack.
Representative Gomez, would you, which items are you referring to?
These, he was referring to these okay. charts, and I just don't know where they come from.
Okay, Representative Gomez, I think they're going to come from a testifier from the American Experiment that we're going to hear from later. So if you would like to talk to this now or later, possibly.
I just was wondering, since it seemed like he was referring to one of the charts that was in there, if we could just get, you know, the source on these. Okay. But I appreciate the information.
Great question, and that I had that question too, so thank you very much. So any other questions from members? Otherwise, we're going to go to testifiers. So, Mr. Etteraker, you're first. And then Ms. Cadoon is next. So please state your name for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm John Hinderacher, president of Center of the American Experiment. My testimony today is based on a report by our economist, John Phelan, which we released at the end of 2018. The report is titled The State of Minnesota's Economy, 2018. And you should have a number of charts from that report in your packets. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but I will talk about some. I realized just this morning that the images that I sent over yesterday did not include the sources for the charts, which are obviously in the paper and on some versions of the images, but I didn't notice that they weren't on the ones that I sent over yesterday. So as I mentioned them, I'll indicate what the sources for the charts are. So I think the starting point for talking about Minnesota's taxes is that we as a state have a problem. As has already been mentioned, Kiplinger recently rated Minnesota as the worst state in the United States for taxes. And there's a good reason for that. Figure 23, which is one of the charts that you have, shows that Minnesota has one of the highest top income tax rates in the country. But not only that, our lowest rate of 5.35% is higher than the highest personal income tax rate in 23 states. That comes from the Tax Foundation. And we at the center believe that Minnesota's high taxes have been a key contributor to the state's lack of competitiveness. In the 21st century, Minnesota has seen below average economic growth, GDP growth. You see that in Figure 3, which comes from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, which, as you probably know, is an agency of the Department of Commerce. So when it comes to economic growth in the 21st century, Minnesota is below average. In the 21st century, Minnesota has also experienced below-average job growth. Now, that's Figure 11, which also comes from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. A lot of people in Minnesota think that Greater Minnesota might be suffering, but the Twin Cities are doing very well economically. However, if you take the Twin Cities statistical metropolitan area as defined by the federal government, and you compare us to the six next largest MSAs by GDP and the six next smallest MSAs by GDP, so that you're looking at our peer group, us and our 12 nearest competitors, what we find is that in the 21st century, the Twin Cities metropolitan area has ranked 11th out of those 13 metropolitan areas. I personally was rather stunned to realize that in the 21st century, the economy of Baltimore has been growing faster than that of the Twin Cities. That also it comes from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Now, one of the things that we see, you can argue about statistics for a long time, but one of the things that we see is that people vote with their feet. And unfortunately, according to the most recent IRS data, Minnesota suffers a net loss of residents to other states in every income category over $25,000. In other words, if your principal income earner in your household earns from zero to $25,000, we have more of those people moving in than we do moving out. if your principal earner makes anything more than $25,000, $25,000 on up, we have more of those people leaving the state than we do coming into the state. We hear a lot of talk about losing the rich, are rich people leaving Minnesota. The fact is that middle-income people are leaving Minnesota and not choosing to move to Minnesota because they are seeking better jobs in other states. That's figure 22 in your packets, and the data come from the IRS. By the way, the IRS is going to come out with a new year's worth of data. They're going to update this massive database sometime very, very soon, and we're going to update this report when those data come out. We also note, by the way, that almost all of that net loss goes to states with lower taxes than Minnesota, virtually 100% of it. We have problems on the corporate side as well. I'm not going to talk about that this morning because it's not in the bills that we have before us. But we, along with everything else, we have the third highest corporate income tax rate anywhere in the United States. We have we're one of the last states that still have an estate tax. And we find that the high corporate income tax in particular is reducing the amount of capital that is being invested in the state and therefore reducing the productivity of the workers in the state. That is a very, very serious problem, but it's a problem for another day. Now, in our view, the tax reduction bills now before this committee don't go far enough to make Minnesota competitive again. Frankly, it's going to take more than the measures that we are now talking about to reverse some of these negative trends and make our economy better than average instead of below average. But House File 42 in particular does represent a significant step in the right direction. And it is a measure that voters want. Now, last fall, our Thinking Minnesota poll found that by 65% to 31%, Minnesotans favor personal income tax cuts in all four brackets, which is exactly what these measures do. So this is something that Minnesotans really do want to see. So I would urge the passage of House File 42 and additional measures as well to reduce the tax burden on all Minnesotans.
Thank you very much. One question, and I know I have some folks here, but the Kiplinger Report, which was out in October. Do you know if they've, are you referring to that report or have they corrected the report? Because at the time, they thought we couldn't, our election thing had not been solved, which would have seen a $60 million increase on taxpayers. That was solved. So I know I've heard the Kiplinger report mentioned a couple times, and I don't know if it, if you're referring to some report that amended that.
No, I'm referring to the October one, and I don't know if they've amended it, and I don't know if that amendment would change our number one ranking, but the one that's been talked about is the October one.
I think it's important to note that that report was inaccurate because we solved that issue in August or September, and so the report that's being cited is not correct. Yeah, as far as the number, Mr. Hitterocker, just please go through the chair here. So if it hasn't been corrected, it would not be necessarily accurate, and you may have to go back and look at those stats again.
Yeah. Everybody that looks at tax burden by state comes out with a little bit different ranking because there's some judgment calls that get made in those calculations. The Tax Foundation, I think, most recently rated us as having the sixth highest tax burden in the United States. So anybody who looks at it concludes that we are indeed a very high tax state.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a few comments. First of all, Minnesota is doing really well economically for most people in the state. And when you start off at a really high level doing well in terms of low unemployment, high productivity, the growth rates may look more depressed than other economies, other cities who start off at a very low productivity. So the growth rate's going to be more depressed because we're already doing so well. So I have an issue looking at just the growth rates rather than the total amount. And the other issue that you mentioned is the tax rate and where we rank. We really want to look at the effective tax rate, what people pay. And we are only slightly a little bit for middle income earners above the national average at 9.6% for an effective tax rate. The national average is 9.4%. And that's for middle-income workers or households. The lower-income households, actually, their effective tax rate is lower than the national average. So many of these studies where you look at Minnesota as being a high-tax state, they're not looking at total tax burden. So you need to look at not just the tax rates, but the local sales tax, property taxes, all of their tax information. So that's the second issue. The third issue that I want to mention is people moving out of our state or into our state as a result of our tax system and our tax rates. There's been no rigorous study that suggests that people move out of states when their tax rates go up. So New Jersey put a very high tax rate on their highest income households. There was absolutely no significant change in those income ranking, those households that received a higher tax rate moving out of the state. California, same situation. They increased the tax rate on their top bracket. They did not see a change in people moving out of that state compared to people that were not exposed to that tax. Maryland, same thing. And that's true of Minnesota as well. So they're moving in and out for other reasons when you look at rigorous studies that have a control group and they look over time when the tax rate goes up. So I haven't seen any study that says, you know, the tax increase influences people's mobility. It's many other factors that people move to a state or out of a state, not necessarily their taxes. And the last thing I want to comment on is that our tax spending pays for benefits for the people of Minnesota. We get a lot of value from investing in our education system, higher education system, our roads and bridges. So you have to look at the benefits that we receive from our tax revenue as well.
Mr. Hitteracker, do you want to respond?
Well, I can just very briefly. It's true that people move for all kinds of reasons, but there are, in fact, studies that have been done. They're cited in our paper, and there's a lot of evidence that high taxes are an important reason why people choose to live in one state versus another state. And I think it's obviously relevant that our net loss of population is almost entirely to lower tax states. So I just don't think you can say the taxes aren't important. The idea that our growth in jobs or our growth in GDP or whatever it might be is slow because we started at such a high level is one that you pretty often hear. It just isn't true. You can't find a point in the 21st century where Minnesota is starting at this high level compared to other states. And if you look at the data in our report that are not percentage changes but that are simply absolute numbers, you see the same thing. And one of the most worrying things in our report is that Minnesota's private sector workers are significantly less productive than the national average. Well, you can't sustain high incomes with below average productivity. The arithmetic just doesn't work. And that's not a percent change. That's a straight comparison. So I don't think that's the answer either. I think we're putting our heads in the sand if we fail to recognize that this state can and should perform a lot better than we are economically.
Representative Representative Schultz, did you?
Sure. So Minnesota has, thank you, Mr. Chair, Minnesota has the most highly educated workforce in the country. And we should be very proud of that. So I'm just going to refer the audience and those listening to some sources. So the Minnesota Budget Project has cited many studies on mobility and tax rates, as well as other great studies on our tax impact and the benefits. And then the North Star Policy Institute is another really good source that has great data and reports looking at our taxes, our benefits, and mobility as a result of tax rate changes.
Representative Joachim.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually, Representative Schultz said a lot of the things I was going to say. I was just also going to mention, too, that when we talk about looking at mobility across the country, there's, like you said, very many reasons, very many qualitative reasons why people move. Warmer climates, where their kids are going. We have an aging demographic. Sometimes going down south is much better. If you look at the Midwest and you look at, say, Wisconsin and Kansas and Iowa, we actually have a net. We're gaining more people from those states than they are. We're losing to them. So if you look at the Midwest region and like climates and like things, we're doing a lot better. So just was going to add that. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to note also, in addition to the high tax state we are, we're also the fifth highest in the nation for spending. Now, there's no doubt we have a good quality of life here in Minnesota. We take care of those who are that our priorities, our education and the sick and the elderly. There's no doubt about that. But the evidence is clear to me in my small little neck of the woods in Wray County. I have a handful of folks that have moved out of state because of the high taxes. So if you're not aware of that, then you're not. You need to open your eyes because it is happening. California, they're leaving by the droves, and New York as well. New Jersey, those high tax states. You look at the studies. We're never going to convince you, Representative Schultz. You'll look at your evidence, and we'll look at ours, and we'll have to agree to disagree, and we can do it in a compassionate, happy way. But we are a high tax state, one of the highest in the nation, highest spending in the nation, and our labor force. Mr. Hintermeyer didn't even talk about that. I think I mispronounced that. Our labor force is shrinking. So this high horse that we're on, that we have such a great state, is shrinking. The baby boomers are retiring. Young kids aren't growing up and going into the trades. We can't find anyone to do electrical work or mechanical work or build our house or lay our carpets or, so the state is a great state. But if we don't get our control on spending and lower our taxes and encourage our youth to go into skilled labor, they will not stay here in our state. And we'll have a hard time finding great skilled laborers and those who want to open businesses and be entrepreneurs to stay here in Minnesota. So that's the warning. You guys can do what you want with it. You could ignore it, and then in 20 years we'll have to say, we told you so.
Can I respond?
The tradition is in the tax committee when your name is mentioned, you may. Representative Schultz.
So, I disagree with your portrayal of California, but I would like you to read the study by Charles Varner and Christabel Young, but it's about migration. It's called Migration in California, the Impact of the Top Tax Rate, which was published in 2012, I believe. But we don't want to falsely look at taxes and attribute mobility to taxes. So I encourage you to look at all of the evidence and rigorous studies that have been done on mobility and tax rate increases. But it's true, we do have an aging workforce. We need more skilled workers in our state. I'm encouraging to know that when I was talking to some venture capitalists, and I didn't know this, but of all of our surrounding states, including Illinois, we've had the most venture capital investment in Minnesota in the last 5 years. So there's some positive things to look at in medical investment, especially in the healthcare technology innovation sector.
I have two more members on the list, and then we'll need to move to the next testifier. So Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we just heard a little bit ago about a debate in which, okay, so we have the highest tax rate, but because our lowest tax rate is below minimum or below the average a little bit, that kind of justifies it. But I would want to just kind of recount for you what the proposals are in front of us this session and what the governor has said. We're thinking about now, I should say the other side is thinking about raising the gasoline tax, which is very regressive. And we're talking about the sick tax reimposition, which is a very regressive tax. What is that going to do to that lower tax rate, but then bring us above the national average in the lower tax rate as well? And then what is the argument for keeping taxes the way that they are? I just think we need to consider everything as a whole, and rather than trying to justify why one is higher and the other one is lower, to understand that there is an impact with people's decisions and about what they do in both our state and how they leave. Why is it that low income seems to be moving in, high income seems to be moving out? Whether or not you agree with us because tax policy or not, there are some implications there, and I just think it's worthy for us to consider all of those factors. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick comment on some of the other things that have been stated. If we spend all the money on tax cuts, then we won't have the funds to pay for the training programs for the trades, and we won't have the funds to pay for the programs for our seniors and our aging population. If you look at the charts on both House File 42 and House File 174, you know, the greatest amounts of both of these proposals goes to the people who make $250,000 or more. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the majority of the seniors who live in our communities, the majority of the young people who are trying to get by and get the education that they need, get the training that they need. You know, these proposals disproportionately spend a lot of money on people who are already doing pretty well. So if we want to pay for those things for everybody else, we can't spend all of our money on tax cuts for other folks. Thank you.
Very good. We're going to move to thank you so much for your testimony, and we're kind of getting a mixture of debate and questions, and that's part of that which we have today, but we'll have more opportunity for that if other testifiers come up, but we need to move on. So we're going to go to Ms. Cadoon, and Mr. Lunka is next. So please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm also here representing the United for Jobs Coalition. There should be a handout that shows about the 80 local business associations and chambers around the state that are also supportive of these proposals. I'd like to thank Representative Kosnick and Hurtas for bringing these important issues forward today. We're in strong support of the bills to reduce all four individual income tax rates, as well as the corporate rate, as you can see in the handout. And the purpose is to offset the tax increases that will incur when you do these federal tax conformity, hopefully in a bill that will be forthcoming. And the other reason to do all four individual income tax is to improve Minnesota's tax climate, as you've been hearing. The tax conformity bill provides an opportunity as well as a need to start addressing areas of Minnesota's tax code where Minnesota is uncompetitive. And that results in a negative impact on investment, entrepreneurship, and talent recruitment and retention, the very items that are needed for a growing economy. You have to realize the personal income tax is not only a tax on an individual's income, but it's also a tax on the vast majority of businesses. 92% of businesses are pass-through entities. That means they pay their business income through their individual income tax. This is businesses, both small and large, our small ma and pa, as well as larger businesses that do this. High tax rates means less money available for investment in those business operations and in their employees. This income is taxed even when it's reinvested in their business operations. In today's world of global competition and increased mobility, as well as the SALT cap that was put into place, that means our state tax rates will matter even more today than they have in the past. As was mentioned, Minnesota's income taxes are among the highest in the nation. It was mentioned about the differences in income level. There's a great study done by Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence that compares by income rankings on all 50 states. And what they show is for Minnesota, we rank, for example, for married filing jointly at incomes of $35,000, we rank 42nd in the nation, the lowest in the nation due to our generous work and family credit. But that those rankings increase as you go up the income scale. So for married at $100,000 of income, we rank 20th in the nation. At $250,000 of income, we rank 10th in the nation. At $500,000 of income, we rank 2nd in the nation. And then at $1 million, we rank 4th in the nation. So you can see how it varies based on income levels because we have a very progressive income tax system. The reality is Minnesota relies greatly on wealthier households and business owners to fund state spending. So it is certainly important that Minnesota policies do not create disincentives for those higher earners and businesses to remain in Minnesota or to relocate to our state. 53% of our state's general fund revenues come from the individual income tax. And the top 10% of Minnesota households, income earners, pay 60% of our individual income tax. So we would urge you, as you put together your bill, to offset those tax increases with rate reductions on all four income tax rates. We believe this will send a good, strong, positive signal to our private sector job creators that you're working to make our tax system more competitive. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cadoon. Any questions for Ms. Cadoon? All right. Thank you. Next, if you'd please state your name.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bill Lunka. I'm the founder and owner of Salt Partners, a small state and local tax consulting firm here in the Twin Cities. I want to start out by thanking you for the opportunity to be here and talk on this bill. And in particular, I'm going to spend some time talking about Minnesota state tax rates as they compare to others. Salt Partners, as I said, is a small state and local tax consulting firm that works with, we're consultants to middle market CPA firms, we're consultants to middle market companies, and we're also consultants to individuals. And in that particular area, we focus a lot of our time on state residency planning, changing your residency from Minnesota and other states to other locations. I have a long history with state and local taxes. I've been doing it about 40 years, over 40 years. I had a long career at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. From there, I went to Deloitte Tax in Minneapolis, where I was mostly a corporate tax consultant. From there, I went to Grant Thornton, and now I've started my own company because I wanted to be an entrepreneur and work in the area of expertise that I have. In your packet, you'll find a series of charts that look like somewhat like this, and they're, apologize, they look quite dense, but I promise you when we're through here, I will, I'll make this all clear. The first chart in the set is the top marginal income tax rates sorted by state for married filing jointly for tax year 2018, so it's the year that people are filing right now. And these, to be clear about these rates, what I did is I compared Minnesota to other states' categories, married filing jointly 2018 tax returns. And the source of the data here is CCH Incorporated. It's one of the tax services we use. And the first page is just ranked alphabetically A to Z, and you can, and obviously you can see Minnesota's highlighted in yellow. And this is handy to look at if you want to compare what Minnesota's married filing jointly rate is at. If you flip to the second page, this is the top marginal income tax rate sorted by highest to lowest. It's the same data on the first page, except it's sorted differently. And you can see we're number five after California, Hawaii, New Jersey, Oregon, and Minnesota. And then Minnesota comes in into the fifth place. With respect to the bill that's before you today, I think the next chart is most important to understand. It's the third chart in the tables here. And what I did here is Minnesota's top marginal tax rate for 2018 is $266,701. That's when the fourth tier bracket kicks in. And I took the income at that level and I compared it to every state in the nation, again using apples to apples comparison. And Minnesota has ranked number one at that threshold. And this is important to the business community, I think, and it's important to growing our middle market companies, because we are exceeding California at this very important threshold where that $266,700 amount, it seems like a lot of money, but it's really businesses that are really starting to employ people, growing their business and so forth. And I just don't think we want to be highest at the nation in that fundamental growth area. Now, I think I will say that I did also do the same analysis for our other tax rates, and I think we fare better nationally. So if you flip to the next page, you'll have the
Mr. Lunca, yes. We've got three more testifiers.
Okay.
So thank you for this information, but if you could kind of wrap it up here.
Of course.
I want to complete and still have a little bit of time for members yet today.
Certainly.
Thank you.
My point here is that if you look through these charts, Minnesota is a high tax state in both corporate income tax, sales tax, and the individual income tax. In our business, we look at the trends of what states are doing. In our business, we are involved in helping clients make decisions about where they should relocate. And I believe that taxes are very important. They're not certainly not the only reason that individuals and businesses move and relocate, but it's a critical part of the decision-making process for businesses and individuals. I would like to say, too, that in my business, sometimes we look at the broad demographics of why of people leaving the state, and there are studies that go one way or the other. In my business, I'm focused mostly in the change of residency space on entrepreneurs, business owners, and that sort of thing. And I think that's where we see folks leaving the state for better tax environments. And quite frankly, those are the people that we want to keep. They're entrepreneurs are a precious asset to our community here in Minnesota, and I think we want to keep those folks developing business and growing businesses here as opposed to elsewhere. I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee has, and I appreciate the time to be here. Thank you very much.
Mr. Lunca, thank you for bringing your expertise to the committee today. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Madden. And Mr. Nagstedt is on deck. Oh, he's not here. Okay. Please state your name.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today with some concerns about these bills to reduce income tax rates. Two primary points I'd like to make is that the bills are very unequal in their impact. They provide the largest tax cuts to the highest income tax filers and would make our tax system more regressive. And secondly, that income tax rate reductions are a poor fit for addressing some of the conformity concerns that you've heard about and would make fewer resources available to enact the targeted solutions that we believe Minnesota needs. As I mentioned, cutting Minnesota's only major progressive tax would make the tax system more regressive overall. The bill provides the largest tax cuts to the highest income households, and that's true whether the tax cuts are measured in dollars or as a percentage of income. We looked at some analysis from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy that found that about 20% of the tax cuts under these bills would go to the 1% of Minnesotans with the highest incomes. And this distributional pattern holds for both of the bills before you today. And while these bills do impact all four of the income tax brackets, they still fall short of benefiting all Minnesotans. An estimated 15%, or about 1 in 7 Minnesotans, would get no tax cut, and that includes about half of Minnesotans with household incomes below $30,000. Lower-income Minnesotans are left out, even though they do their part in paying taxes to support public services in Minnesota. And I'll mention that this is an income group that similarly saw smaller tax cuts than others under the federal tax bill, and 30% of this income group saw no federal tax cut at all. So this would repeat that pattern. A second concern relates to the argument that reducing income tax rates as part of addressing conformity would be a good trade-off, but who pays more and who pays less under conformity really depends on a lot of factors in terms of the individual income tax. And the people who benefit under rate reductions are not the same people who would see the tax increases from conformity. When you had the hearing on conformity, you heard about some of the groups of folks who would see state tax increases if Minnesota simply conforms to the federal bill. That includes families with children, includes seniors, people with disabilities, and families receiving the property tax refund and renter's credit, and includes other folks who would lose certain itemized deductions, like some of the workers in the trades that you heard about in prior hearings. We don't believe that those Minnesotans should be asked to pay higher taxes from conformity to pay for income tax rate reductions that may not benefit them. We think we need targeted solutions to those conformity issues, and spending resources in this way makes it more difficult to do so. And finally, I do have to mention the large size of House File 42 and reiterate that we can't lose sight of what our taxes pay for, and that tax cuts of this size does make it more difficult to invest in broader prosperity in Minnesota and the things that also help make for a strong economy, including investments in our workforce, in our infrastructure, basic research, and other things that support our workforce. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hall. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Max Hall, and I represent AFSCME Council 5. We're a labor union representing more than 43,000 hardworking families in the state, and so I'm glad that those voices can be a part of this discussion this morning. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 42 as well as House File 174. As Ms. Madden highlighted, these bills are significant in terms of their cost. Over $8 billion in the next 4 years for House File 42 and over $1 billion for House File 174. We would contend that obviously you can't take these bills as single issue bills. You have to think of it in a totality and in terms of options of dealing with our response to the federal tax law that was signed into law in 2017. We would just urge the committee to look at increasing standard deduction for tax filers, something along the lines of Representative Hewlett's bill. So as you know, the individual income tax works by the more money you earn, the more you go up the income tax ladder. And so as Ms. Madden highlighted, the significant concern that we have with this legislation is that higher income individuals would disproportionately benefit from the tax cuts that they would realize. So we hear all the time that Minnesota is in desperate need of investing in public services, public programs, everything from K-12 education to higher education, LGA, CPA. You hear all the time from individuals on these issues. And so when you look at just these bills as single issue bills, $8 billion and then $1 billion taken away from the general fund, obviously that gives you as policymakers less room to make those critical investments. One thing I would like to note is some claim that this is necessary as a result of the $1.5 billion surplus from the November forecast, but we, of course, just like others, would like to remind you that when you take inflation into account, that's realistically around $300 million. And so when you're proposing permanent tax cuts, when you're looking at that, those bills when in relation to the real surplus after inflation, you know, you're looking at structural deficits going into the future. So we don't want to repeat previous sessions that you've had to deal with when budget deficits are a reality. So we would just urge the committee to look at the investments that are really important for working families, and we're glad to offer their perspective in this discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against House Files 174 or House File 42? Okay, I'm going to open it up. We've got thank you, testifiers. Open up for discussion on any of these bills. Members, Representative Carlson, I had you on the list. You've been patiently waiting. Did you?
Mr. Chairman, I realized why you passed over because you wanted to be sure you got the testimony. But I was going to make a comment about the exodus of people. Yep. And I went back to 1970. I was elected shortly thereafter. Minnesota had 2.8 million people. And I just checked in 2017, our estimated population is 5.6 million. I was concerned that somebody was going to be needed to turn off the lights, but Apparently, we've had people remaining in Minnesota and coming to Minnesota. You know, population increases for a variety of reasons. You have an influx of people, immigrant population, people who come from other states, birth rates, and a lot of things go into that. But we, in that period of time, increased by 1.8 million people. So somebody's staying. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I actually wanted to focus a little more about what the impacts are of the people who stay in Minnesota, because that's the majority, and the people that we actually will be impacted by whatever law we deal with. But I think it's really interesting that you put these together on the agenda because they really show some really differences in values and who should get the major tax break. In that if you look at just the first two groupings in these tables prepared by House Research, and you look at the households that earn under $100,000 a year, in Representative Hertas's bill, they'd get 29% of the benefit. In Representative Kosnick's bill, they'd get 27% of the benefit. And in Representative Hewitt's bill, they'd get 70% of the benefit. But it's not just at that lower modest income that you actually really see the impact. It's also about when you look at that top class, which is over $250,000 a year. And that goes all the way up to the people who get $20 million a year. I know there's not as many as those. But in Representative Hewitt's bill, dealing with the standard deduction, 4% of the benefit would go to that group versus 35 and 34% in the others. But in the issue of what makes someone decide to move, if you're at just the very bottom of that bracket, that highest bracket, $250,000, you're making like $21,000 a month. That's more than a minimum wage worker makes in a year. And if you're making $21,000 a month, and even in their most generous proposal in front of us, they would save less than $400. And I just can't believe that, you know, 300 some dollars a month would make that big a difference, that you'd want to uproot your family, uproot potentially your business, because I can't imagine how I could spend $21,000 a month, but I suspect you'd invest most of it. But if you did, that marginal $388 or, you know, a little less than $400, I just can't believe that that tips the scales. So I really think that as we go forward, we really need to think about who benefits and what really is going to make a difference in our economy. I know that modest income people put most of their money back into the economy, in their local economy, and we're a consumer-based economy for better or for worse, where I suspect those at the highest end put more of whatever savings they would get into investments, which may be in Minnesota, but may be in companies in other states as well, or even other countries. So I think I appreciate the fact that you gave us a chance to really look at some contrasts here. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we've had some very diverse opinions today and presentations. I've noticed a trend in some committees, not this one at this point, and I hope it never happens, but when we agree with folks or disagree with folks, I think we need to treat them respectfully, which we do in this committee, and I hope we continue to do that. Some committees, if you disagree with somebody, they're the enemy, and you go after them like a pit bull. And I've seen that happen several times in committees, and I think that's unfortunate, and I thank you for your leadership. I hope we have too much respect for this committee to go down that road, because I've always said today's opponent could be tomorrow's friend, and that's you don't want to be burning bridges, and I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that. Today's bill hearing spent over $5 billion, and so I think it's time for me to give my speech. We probably won't get 10% of that as our target, Mr. Chairman, but it's time for me to give my speech as my many years as tax chair. We want to hear everything, and it could be $20 billion worth, and I really don't care, because I think, and I appreciate the bills you scheduled today, and I think that we need to hear all the ideas, and then there's going to be some very tough decisions to make. It kind of reminds me of when we have $20 billion of requests and we can do $1 billion as our target. It's kind of like trying to suck a watermelon through a garden hose. I've done it many times. It's hard. But what I'd like to just close, so thank you, Mr. Chairman, for a good hearing, diverse opinions, diverse ideas, diverse testifiers, and the committee being very respectful, even if we don't. You see how nice I was to Ms. Madden? I mean, she's awesome. But I would just say this, that I would like that name of that 1986 tax bill book that you have in hardcover.
Very good.
What's
I'm sorry. It's the, Mr. Chair, it's the Showdown at Gucci Gulch. And Gucci was the brand of the shoes that the lobbyists wore who were out in the deal. That's how that received its name. And they'd be waiting out there. Yes. I have floor shine, I believe. But,
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's, and I hope members will give the chairman a lot of latitude on, you know, we might be saying, oh, my gosh, there's another $2 billion and we're going to have $500 million. I think that's the way to go, the tax committee, to get it out on the table. And then we've got some tough decisions we'll be making. You have some tough decisions to make. But hopefully we can all work together in this committee.
Chair Davis, thank you so much for those comments. And I think the debate was great today, and we're going to have a difference on bills like this, and I knew there wouldn't. I appreciate Representative Hertaus and Representative Hewitt and Representative Kosnick bringing these bills forward. And also, as you say, we're going to have a limited amount of dollars. And so it's going to be important, you know, in my mind, that we are going to have to target those dollars to where we think it can really move the dial and make the biggest difference and those type of things. And so in the end, that's the decisions we have to make. So thank you for those comments. And so what we will do, Representative Davids renews his motion to lay over House File 174 as amended for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. And then also, Representative Davids, would you move House File 42 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill? And I guess we are over, otherwise I'd give any 30 seconds apiece, Representative Hertaus or Representative Kosnick, before we make
the final motion. An amendment on 42.
Also. We're going to hold off on that because I don't think it made the packets.
Okay.
So thank you for that, but we'll deal with that later.
Well, my closing comment would be, Chair Marquardt, thank you. We've been together now for 7 years on tax committees, and I certainly have come to know you, and thank you for hearing the bill. We've got other tax bills that I'll certainly be talking to you about as well. I would like to just respond to quickly to one comment that Representative Carlson made. In 1970, Representative Carlson, I was a senior in high school, and I did a study on the Minnesota state budget, and it was approaching $1 billion.
Oh, my.
It was approaching $1 billion for the general fund budget. And although we have doubled in population or maybe even tripled, I think we're probably going to be looking close to $50 billion for a general fund revenue coming out of this biennium. So I think that clearly government has been growing much faster than our population and maybe even the private sector growth. But thank you, and thanks for hearing the bill.
Representative Kosnick, 15 seconds.
Chair Marquardt and the committee, thank you for hearing this bill. I think there was one area of agreement, and as Ms. Madden had said, to not pay higher income for conformity, and I think that should be the goal, and that's kind of what we tried to do in the tax committee last year, and so hopefully this bill goes a long ways to preserving the taxpayers and with the conformity to help hold taxpayers harmless.
Thank you very much. Representative Davids renews his motion to lay over House File 42 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Members, thank you so much. We are adjourned.